This is OSLCC Chapter 25, Tracing Our Roots, celebrating 25 years of cultural centers. Broncos, some near, some far, but no matter where you are, we're speaking to you and we hope you're listening. And you never know, we might even be engaging with you real soon.
Hello again, this is Issa Pena. Today our guest is Sydney Torres.
Hi, I'm so excited that you all had me on the podcast today. My name is Sydney Torres. I use she, her pronouns. And I'm so excited to get into our talk today.
Welcome, Sydney. Would you mind giving us a little background on yourself and your connection to the center?
Yeah, so I was I am a previous coordinator for the center. I was working there from 2017 to 2020, so most recently earlier this spring, about 3 years. And during my time there, I had such a joy working with the center and the students and seeing it grow.
To give folks a little background about the WRC, the concept originated in 1971, but fully came into fruition when ASI funded the first Women X's History Month in 1975. The center was then built a year later and was located in what is now the Asian and Pacific Islander Student Center. Sydney, do you know any other origin stories of the WRC?
Well, I think an important context is that, you know, Cal Poly Pomona, like many campuses, started as an all-male campus. And so it was founded on that premise. But even before it was a satellite location for Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, the campus space was used for an all-boys school. And so the campus has this deep-rooted history of serving men, right, and male students. And I think that's definitely one of the contributing factors to when women support services started at Cal Poly Pomona. The first women students were able to start classes in the beginning of the 1960s. And so there's definitely like this huge gap of, you know, time in between when there wasn't any women students on campus. And then even when they were able to start, it was a few hundred students compared to the thousands of men students. So I think that's an important part of our origin story and our history is that, you know, the center was born and it being the first cultural center to really serve our students' needs, right? Seeing that students needed or women students needed extra support on campus and maybe we're having a different or inequitable experience to their male peers. And that, you know, still rings true today, which is why we still exist, right? And why the Women's Resource Center still exists there. And I think another important part of, you know, kind of this history is like that the smaller amount of women students still stands true today at Cal Poly Pomona, you know, and the transformation of the majors that it serves and how, you know, women are socialized into, you know, deciding what major to pick, that all contributes to kind of the work that the Women's Resource Center does at Cal Poly.
Thank you for sharing that, Sydney. But yeah, that's really interesting you say that, especially with like the space and holding it, of it. And then that just being that wide gap where there wasn't space for women.
Definitely.
And I know you were there the last couple of years to go back about your origin story with the WRC. And I know you were there when the X was added. Do you know what year was added and what is the significance of that?
Yes, it was added in 2018, you know, prior to me arriving at the Women's Resource Center. And this actually is true to quite a lot of women's resource centers or women's spaces at universities is that they've gone through like several transitions. And so the most recent transition was right before I had arrived, which was the separation of violence prevention work from women's center work, right? Previously, it had been called the Violence Prevention and Women's Resource Center. Before that, it was the Stop Violence Office. Before that, it was a women's reentry center. And so it's evolved like consistently over the years. And I think when I arrived, or kind of the sentiments that I felt when I arrived and getting to know the community, was that there was this really loss of identity because so much of it had been ingrained in that violence prevention work, which is understandable. A lot of the center's funding was with grants based in violence prevention work. Their staff was trained and focused in violence prevention work. And it was that the only area space on campus where students could come to if they had experienced any type of domestic violence or other types of violence to get support. And so with the chancellor's executive order to kind of separate our gender-based services from violence prevention services, that's when kind of this identity, I want to say like gap, kind of happened. And so when arriving, one of the things that was really helpful actually was that the cultural centers had invested in an external review for programs and services at the Women's Resource Center to see what the current needs were and what the students felt like they needed to be after violence prevention was gone from the core of their work, and how the Women's Resource Center could best serve students and campus as a whole. And so coming into that, you know, reading the external review, there was definitely some gaps in service. Some of the feedback that came in through that was that, you know, there was really this loss of identity since violence prevention had left, that they still were trying to figure out what kind of services they were supposed to provide and really answering the question of like, who are we? There was also some information in there that just shared and, you know, to go back into, or to kind of sidetrack into feminist history, but, you know, feminist history has, you know, deep roots in things like racism and transphobia, and so do our institutions, right? And, you know, even gender bias, obviously, only having men at the institution originally, right? And that's why our centers exist. And so really looking at the population that the Women's Resource Center was serving or wanted to serve, and how to create this very inclusive space where maybe some of, you know, the students in the past had not felt included in or had felt isolated from, right? Which sometimes happens when, you know, identity centers exist, but that doesn't mean identity center work has to be exclusive to one identity, right? And so with that, we kind of decided to take on the project of what should our new brand be? What should our, you know, new service be? And with that came a logo change, and with that came a reevaluation of our name. The X, you know, to give some context, has been used in several different communities. It's a, you know, lexical term that, or letter that is able to really represent a wider range of community, including non-binary folks, including genderqueer folks, including two-spirit people, our trans community, all of the above. And so we felt that including the X in our name was an important step forward to really separate ourselves from any sort of experiences or history that either the center or the services or even just students felt, you know, on campus, right? That the space wasn't for them. We really wanted to be forward thinking in that sense. You know, in feminist history as well, we've seen these transitions of how to spell the word women. And in, you know, there was this transition from spelling it with the E to the Y, and that movement being very transphobic in terms of including trans voices in services and events that had used the word women spelled with a Y. And so that's really where the X came from in the most recent adjustment of the spelling. So I'm not saying like we came up with the spelling with the X, but it had been, you know, adopted in recent past, and we felt like us adopting it as well was the right move for us to move forward as a center, but also to stay in line with a lot of community services that were in the area to where women's centers are going in general. Some spaces had already changed their name to the X, We were definitely one of the first, not the first, but one of the first, at least in the local Southern California or California area, really trying to look towards this new leaf of the Women's Resource Center and that name change being included. But we also felt like our community was more representative than just the term women spelled with an E. And we wanted to really center that in this new step forward in our program services and offerings.
And like another follow-up question with that, since you were there at the beginning of the change, did you see any of the change of the X? Did you see any change of the folks coming into the center?
Yes.
Was there a change?
For sure. And it was, you know, really exciting because even if like people didn't have personal experiences of feeling isolated in the space, you know, once we changed the X and like one, I want to like give a caveat that name changes can be super superficial, right? They can be face like only face value and not really ingrained into the services, but we wanted to be really intentional in saying that changing our name was a first step, right? And that the work does not end there, but it has to be continuous, that we are including now these members of our community that we're opening up to and we're being welcome to and we're being inclusive of into all of our work, into our programs, including their perspectives, into the people that we bring on campus, every all of the above. And so I want to preface with that. But yeah, there was a change in who was coming into the center. We saw a lot of different identities that really spanned and were inclusive of the X. We saw a lot of intersecting identities from other centers. And we worked, you know, alongside the Pride Center to really communicate, like, what does the X mean? We had some bulletin boards and some information that were shared with both with community so that there really was this collaborative effort to make sure our students knew that our space was for them too.
That's great. I love hearing that. And I, as working at the center as well, I did see, well, I was only there when the X was already up, so I didn't have anything to like reference it back, but I agree. I think it was a really diverse amount of people that were coming through different identities.
And, you know, I don't want to say like the name change came with no struggles because it definitely did. It took over a year in order to actually change the name, to change the logo, to change the wording around why we use the X, all of the above. And like oftentimes that is what the role of identity centers, but particularly the cultural centers, right, were, is that they're this voice to push forward support services and resources that actually reflect the students and meet our students' needs, right? And sometimes that comes with resistance from, you know, upper administration or, you know, the campus as a whole. But that is like part of the roots, like connecting it back to like legacy. Like that's part of the roots of the cultural centers as a whole and the Women's Resource Center is really pushing forward this agenda to center our students and their voice and their needs in the programs, in our names, in everything that we provide.
And to just go off of that, what space do you think that the WRC holds within OSLCC? And what makes it unique from the other cultural centers we have on campus?
So I think it definitely holds a special place within OSLCC. Since we were the first identity-based center on campus, I think in some ways the Women's Resource Center kind of paved the way to see how the university could financially, like staff-wise, support the work of identity centers. And, you know, within this, I'm sure we'll come up in the legacy of the Cesar E. Chavez Center, right? But, you know, with the great work of students, you know, other centers were able to be established, and later on the Women's Resource Center was swept under the cultural centers, which has been a really great way to truly create intersectional programming resources and have a truly inclusive perspective into what we do as work. So, you know, besides being, you know, the one of the first identity centers on campus or the first identity center on campus, I think we were able to kind of play this role of sharing almost some knowledge of how to kind of establish, you know, and how to really make your mark on campus, at least for, you know, whatever iteration we were at that time, right? So I think it definitely plays an important role. I also think the Women's Resource Center, along with the Pride Center, right, play this really important role of connecting all of the cultural centers together, right? We have this really unique ability to truly be intersectional in our work because there's a person in every single other center that like identifies with our center, right? And it's not the same for different racial identities, you know? Sometimes it's harder to find those lines of connection, although they are there, right? So I feel like, you know, the Women's Resource Center along with the Pride Center play this really great connecting role of the cultural centers as a whole in order to really, you know, provide inclusive intersectional programming.
And with your time at the center, what WRC events that were hosted do you think had the most impact on students?
I mean, I feel like we did so much great programming in the 3 years that I was there with the help of students and our graduate assistant. I think when I think about the word legacy, I think about our Women's Leadership Institute. We started it, you know, the first year I was there and had such a great positive response and really just, you know, shows how impactful a short-term program can be. It was over 2 days. It was really a day and a half, right? And, you know, students attending had this really immersive experience of learning about the woman identity as a whole, how it relates to them, and then how does that intersect with leadership? And that's something that applies to literally all students' leadership, right? It doesn't matter what major you come from. It doesn't matter what minor you have or what area or career field you're going into. Leadership is something that can be relatable to anyone. And in particular, right, it's really important to connect the two, the women identity and leadership, in order to really make social change happen, right, in the world that we experience both at Cal Poly Pomona and beyond. And so I definitely would say that was an impactful program. Outside of that, we, you know, the Women's Resource Center before I had arrived had been a little bit, I want to say, isolated from some of the, you know, isolated in terms of like feelings of isolation from not having a celebration at the end of the year. The cultural centers have such a rich history in these beautiful cultural graduation celebrations. And it was one that the Women's Resource Center really there was a whole of, right? There wasn't one that had existed. And it's one that the students really, really were pushing because they'd see all these other centers being able to celebrate the hard work that their students had done. And there was kind of this gap for the in-between of a formal celebration. I don't want to disregard any celebrations that, you know, had happened in the past, but one that was institutionalized, like the other cultural graduation celebrations. And so that was something that we took on our first year, and it blossomed. It started as a Women's Resource Center pinning ceremony. Myself and the other staff felt that it was, you know, probably best to take baby steps in terms of creating a full-blown celebration for the end of the year. And so we started with a pinning ceremony, able to honor our students that were involved with the Women's Resource Center, other students that felt really connected to our center. They were able to bring along a person to pin them at the end of the ceremony, and we had this really great, beautiful dinner. And that expanded into Women of Distinction Awards, which is really exciting that it continues and is a way to really celebrate and uplift all women on campus. And that includes faculty, staff, and students. And so now the iteration is a combination of both the pinning ceremony and the award celebration, which is really great. And it's institutionalized within the Cultural Center graduation celebration and student affairs, which is super awesome. So that definitely, I feel like, had a large impact. I remember, you know, distinct moments from our first pinning ceremony, but also to like the most recent of just, students having that special moment on stage, bringing someone that has impacted, their Cal Poly Pomona journey positively and being able to celebrate with them together in this, kind of intimate moment of pinning. And sometimes it was our students' children that were pinning them, and it was super sentimental. Sometimes it was their professors, it was their mentors, and sometimes it was their best friends. And so it's such a great moment to kind of see this culmination of a student's experience be celebrated in a way that was also connected to their identity. So I definitely say that was another impactful program that the Women's Resource Center adopted.
It's really cool. To go back on, you were speaking about the leadership that comes out of the WRC mm-hmm. with the program. How do you think volunteer groups and clubs such as Girl Squad and Feminist Fight Club that have come out of the WRC contribute to the culture we have here?
Yes. So I think they contribute drastically. Girl Squad was really formulated and born out of this idea that we needed to tackle a few things. One is that the Women's Resource Center had a lot of interested students that wanted to be involved, but we only had a certain amount of, funding, like all of the cultural centers, to pay for student assistance and paid roles within the center. And so we kind of needed to fill this area of volunteering. But I didn't want to just do a program or a volunteer experience that was kind of like one and done, or that, you check in and you check out. I really wanted to be intentional about like filling a need that we had on campus and then using these volunteers in order to give them skills, fill that need, and then have it almost as a stepping stone to where if they really liked it, they could apply, for our student assistant positions. And then they'd already have all this knowledge about the center. I was at a, all student affairs meeting, and I was sitting at a table randomly assigned with one of the assistant basketball coaches for the women's team at Cal Poly Pomona. And I was chatting with her, and I had just read this Melissa Harris Perry article about how she practices self-care and really how for her, it ends up being squad care, that she's really bad about checking in on herself and as much change as she's, tried to, do in terms of like being self-initiated in her self-care. It really comes for her in the people that she surrounds herself with, and her friends and her colleagues, that they provide this squad care for each other. And, talking to the women's, basketball coach and about how they want students out at games and providing this very supporting environment and cheering people on, I was like, this is the need, right? The need that to provide an ethic of care for women on campus, right? To have this culture that women are cared for, and they're cared for by each other, but they're also cared for by the Cal Poly Pomona community. And so that's kind of how Girl Squad was born. We made it, application based, and students were, would apply, and we'd really accept everyone that was available in terms of their schedule. There really wasn't a limit on who could get involved, because the more people that we have providing this ethic of care or this understanding of the ethic of care, like the more we're changing a culture, right? And so it really sprouted off, as into a whole nother, it grew so fast. Students wanted to be involved. They wanted to have this connection to the center. They wanted to learn more. They also were really excited to get involved with different parts of campus. They'd visit track meets and cheer on the women athletes there. They'd be at volleyball games. They'd be at basketball games. They'd also be tabling, putting on these cute little events that show support for women across campus, taking an affirmation that you need, recognizing women in STEM on Pi Day and passing out Pi, creating this care, right, that our campus recognizes and care for women. It has grown since. And it continues to be, you know, I'm sure, a impactful experience for our students, but it's also been a really great stepping stone for students to just have that first involvement. And that's what it was meant to be, you know, kind of fill this need of connection to space, of finding a sense of belonging, and then being able to grow their leadership skills in a way that they could springboard into another position on campus. So it's definitely a point of pride.
Thank you, Cindy, for sharing how those have really influenced, those clubs have really influenced the WRC. And to kind of wrap things up, and I wanted to just ask, what do you believe the legacy of the Women's X Resource Center is?
What is the legacy? I always like to kind of describe the environment of the Women's Resource Center whenever I talk about, you know, or when I used to talk about the programs and services that we did, was that, you know, we serve this space not only to educate the campus about women's issues and what women's experiences are, and really amplifying the voices of women on campus. I think that's part of the legacy. But I think the other part is really being this space that empowers students. We would oftentimes have students come into the center and, you know, be in a headspace of discouragement. You know, they had experienced something in a classroom, or they had been rejected from, you know, a certain job opportunity, and they had felt really isolated, or they were really nervous about a job interview that was coming up. And I would often describe the Women's Resource Center when those students would come in is that it was their hype person, you know? We were the people to really fill them with self-assurance and confidence and healthy self-esteem to allow them to go into the different spaces on campus and really tackle them at the best version of themselves. And so I do think that's part of the legacy of this new iteration of, you know, women's services at Cal Poly Pomona, is that, you know, not only are we trying, or, you know, the center is trying to transform spaces across campus to be more inclusive of women, but it is also contributing to this personal development and this personal internal change within women on campus to feel like they can go off and conquer anything that they want to.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, for myself, when I first went to Cal Poly, it's one of the first places that drew me. I just went there. I didn't know much. I was a transfer student. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I'm not necessarily a freshman that doesn't know anything mm-hmm. necessarily, yep. but like, also, where do I go? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the first places I went. And so for me, it just, like, what drew me most toward it was the community. I could really see it there. And then mm-hmm. the way you walk in, it's like you're already, like, added to the community as soon as yes. you're in the doors. And mm-hmm. so I feel like, yeah, we really are able to encapsulate community within our center. Mm-hmm. I even think when we're doing this virtually, I still think that our essence is still really there.
For sure. Yeah. And that's feedback that we'd get continuously from students. We'd have students walk in for the first time and just share, like, wow, I feel so relaxed here. I feel like I can talk to anyone, you know? And that is part of the legacy, right? That it's a space where students can walk in and know that they're not going to be judged. They're going to be accepted for who they are, but they're also going to be able to grow into the person that they want to be. And so, yeah, it's definitely, that was, while I was working there, some of the best moments is, you know, seeing students come in and immediately this feeling of welcomeness. And it probably, you know, some of it probably had to do that we welcomed every single person that came to the door with the word welcome. And I was really adamant about that, but I think it does, it changes, it contributes to the culture, right? It contributes to this energy that students receive when they walk in the door. And I definitely, you know, hope that that's the legacy that continues.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Cindy, and for sharing some of your knowledge of the history of Cal Poly Pomona's Women X Resource Center.
Yes, of course. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.